Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Here's a story of a band not faded, who created a blah album also weak. It was far from going gold, and rarely covered. All its reviews were bleak. Then the one day when the big city and his boogie took the throne and added their wacky touch. To debate and to discuss these not quite classics, that's the way that they became the Blah Bomb Bunch. The Blah Bomb Bunch. The Blah Bomb Bunch. That's the way they became the Blah Bomb Bunch.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll and home of the brand new series here on Talk is Jericho, the Blabum Bunch. More on that coming up, but you know what we got to do first. It is the must anticipated, highly decorated Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, my friend Joe, he went on the Dolly Parton diet. Yeah. It made Jolene, 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 Jolene. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
That's terrible. A little love for Dolly from Duff. And Talk is Jericho. Of course, Dolly's new rock and roll record, Rockstar, coming out soon with 30 songs on it. I mean, my goodness, this is going to be amazing. And plus, Guns N' Roses kicking off the summer tour. Very long way from here. All the way in Abu Dhabi on June 1st. They're going to tour Europe and North America before they play the Power Trip Festival this October in Indio, California. They got Friday Night with Iron Maiden. Fozzy is on the road as well with Ugly Kid Joe and Pistols at Dawn. We're in Dallas tonight, May 12th. Then we hit Oklahoma City tomorrow night, May 13th. We're in Kansas City, Missouri on Monday the 15th. There's going to be some big shows there. We're also rocking Green Bay, Indianapolis, St. Charles, Illinois, Turtle Bay, Atlanta, Tampa, Destin, Fort Myers. We're all over the place. So many great cities and venues. Before we close it out, like I said, June 5th in Destin, Florida. Full list of tour dates and all ticket information is at FozzyRock.com. We're doing the amazing VIP meet and greet, one of the best in the biz. We hang out with you, take pictures, sign autographs, shake your hand, play a private show just for you. We got few spots available. Hit up FozzyRock.com. We'll see you on the road all the way up until June 5th. All right, today's show.
Here's a story of a band not faded, who created a blah album also weak. It was far from going gold, and rarely covered. All its reviews were bleak. Then the one day when the big city and his boogie took the throne and added their wacky touch. To debate and to discuss these not quite classics, that's the way that they became the Blah Bomb Bunch. The Blah Bomb Bunch. The Blah Bomb Bunch. That's the way they became the Blah Bomb Bunch.
So if that didn't give it away, Corey Taylor returns to Talk is Jericho, along with his guitar player Zach Throne, so we can break down one of the most critically panned albums of all time from one of our all-time favorite bands. Of course, we're doing a track-by-track deep dive analysis on Kiss's 1981 concept album, Music from the Elder. This is the first Kiss record to feature drummer Eric Carr. It was the last one to feature Ace Frehley. Super producer Bob Ezrin returned to produce this. Lou Reed did some songwriting as well. It was supposed to be a concept album. You can laugh. We laugh the entire way through the show, as you're about to hear. Corey, Zach, and I have so many stories about the making of the record, the songs, the lyrics, the playing, that infamous Solid Gold TV appearance where Gene Simmons cries. You can find it on YouTube. We have lots of theories and explanations for what went so wrong with The Elder. And pay attention, because Corey's also dropping some info on his upcoming solo album, CMFT2, coming out later this year, his new single Beyond, which is out any day now. It's a deep dive into Kiss, music from The Elder and the Blabbermouths, where we are going to be dissecting some mediocre albums by some very, very great bands. And this is one of them, Kiss, music from The Elder, right here, right now on Talk Is Jericho.
We want to do a little number for you now.
Well, obviously, the first single is going to come out in May. We're hoping to get the album out in September. So it's being mixed right now, dude.
As we speak.
Killer, dude. It's really good.
Yeah, dude.
Well, there you go. The show has already started. I'm already recording. So this is for your next solo record. Obviously, Zach Throne is a big part of that. And, of course, with Big City, Corey motherfucking Taylor here.
Big City!
That's right.
And we're going to be talking about one of the most critically panned records of all time. But hopefully, your new record will not be critically panned. The second CMFT album.
That's right.
Tell us a little about it. You said it's amazing and it's going to be rad. And
yeah, I mean, I've been bigging it up all over the place, man. It's called CMF2. And it is, God, Zach, how do I even describe it? It's just, it's an expansion. It's not just an expansion of the first one, because it eats the first one alive, man. Like, it's
agreed.
It's whereas the first album was kind of where I was coming from.
Yeah.
This album is very much where we're going. So it incorporates elements from both of my prior engagements, as it were. So there's hints of Slipknot, hints of Stone Sour. There's hints of the acoustic stuff that I've done in the past. And there's hints of everything that we did on CMFT. So it's a more modern sounding album. It's darker.
Way darker.
It's heavier in ways, but it's still got all the melody. It's got some of the best guitar playing I've ever heard in these weirdos. And of course, you know, Zach Throne's here to sex it up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because that's what he does. I mean,
I bring the sexy back.
He brings the sexy back. Take it to the chorus. That's what he does.
I don't know where it went, but I brought it back.
It's been the missing piece of the Corey Taylor puzzle for years. Just a distinct lack of sexiness.
Really?
Yeah, totally.
It took me a while to find it, damn it.
But it's interesting because I think the first CMFT came out during the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So you couldn't really tour on it.
Yeah. I think it was like the perfect time to release it too, because, you know, we were kind of dabbling with it and going kind of back and forth on whether or not we wanted to do it. And then we were like, you know what? As long as we do this on the low and do it safe and do it right, you know, let's just go for it. And we had so much fun doing it that coming around this time around, we knew exactly how we wanted to do it.
Yeah.
The excitement is palpable for this album too. Like just from the fans base, because, you know, we toured a little bit, but, you know, a lot of people didn't see it. So everybody's really stoked this time around to kind of get a little taste of the Zach Throne sexiness, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think Zach is one of the most underrated musicians in America, for sure.
Agreed.
And, you know, much like my partner, Rich Ward, getting a chance to really show your stuff now with Corey.
Much too kind.
And obviously with the Bruce Kulick Band, which is where I was introduced to you and all the work you've done with them. So
right.
You really are getting a chance to get the spotlight now. You're an overnight sensation 37 years into your career.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Totally. It was a very long overnight.
It has. Yeah. It's been a long night.
So the record or single comes out in May and the record comes out in September. That's what you're saying?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're shooting. We're mixing it right now. Speaking of sex, I mean, we're going to have to take band photos here in about a week. So,
oh, shit.
On the spinach diet, trying to lose that last
week. Yes. I chose the broccoli diet, though, you know, just to give it a little variety.
Put Zach all the way at the end of the band shot. We're like, you know what? You go do your solos first, and then we'll fly you in.
It's okay. They've got filters for that sort of thing nowadays, Corey.
Thank God.
You could do the Ann Wilson and just stretch the video like they did for These Dreams.
Oh, God.
So let's talk about, like we said, one of the most critically panned, but also one of the most interesting albums, in my opinion, ever, from Kiss, who are all giant Kiss fans. And this idea came when I saw Corey in the studio wearing an Elder t-shirt, which might be the first Elder t-shirt I've ever seen, ever.
And it's probably the second, because Tooch actually not only owned one, but got me I was just like, you're a maniac, dude.
That's right.
I punish these guys with the elder all the time. Just out of nowhere, I'll just send bits of the fanfare, you know, just play it.
Oh, my God.
We were checking into a hotel in the UK.
At like 2 in the morning.
We're so confused why there were all these people there to check in this late. And I had my phone in my pocket. I start on fanfare. And I'm like leaned over the counter going, yeah, this, and all of a sudden in the background, you hear. And these guys just dying. And I'm like, somebody coming in? Like, what's happening?
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, it was when Unmasked said, we will be the lowest selling Kiss album. The elder said, hold my beer. Let's put it that
way. Yeah, yeah.
Hold my
That's
goblet.
Where we're at, man. And yeah. Honestly, I'm fascinated by this album. I listen to it every day, and he can attest to it.
Wow,
I can.
I study it like the Zapruder film, dude. Like, I'm just trying to figure out where they were going, like, what they were thinking. Like, it's just, you talked about looking at the original issue and the way it was pulled out, because the way it's sequenced now makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, it's like,
no,
there's no story. Like, you're
no,
what, huh?
Yeah.
What? I mean, it's so weird and yet so beautiful that I can't stop listening to it, dude.
Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, he went over it. He went over it like bar by bar when we were in England. I mean, any opportunity to play the Elder and like rewind it and just examine one bar of Odyssey and then figure out, you know, how did they get from here to here? Like, yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Just to give a little background for those who might not know. So Kiss, obviously the biggest rock band in the 70s. As is every time, you guys went through it with Slipknot, I'm sure. When the decade changes, there's a little bit of a switch in musical tastes and styles. Right. And like Corey mentioned, they put out Unmasked, which is a pure pop record. And it's not pop like Cheap Trick pop or Loverboy pop. It's early 80s Stephen Bishop pop.
Weird.
If you like pina coladas. And so then they decided they wanted to come back and really make a statement. And make a new heavy record, rock and roll record. And they bring in Bob Ezrin, who produced possibly their greatest album, Destroyer. And then about 10 years later, produced possibly their other greatest studio album, Revenge.
Right.
And suddenly something switches and shifts. Now, I'm not sure how much of a Kiss historian you are, Zach, but he seems like you would probably know. How did the Elder become this concept record, not the rock record they were planning on making?
Well, I think Corey is more informed at this point because he acquired the book, The Making of the Elder.
I read it too.
You read it too? Oh, yeah. See? Okay, so.
Oh, of course. So, Corey, you take. We are psychopaths, man. Like, for real. Like,
there's a chapter in the book talking about whose hand it is on the cover of the record holding the door knocker. A whole chapter, not one paragraph, like 15 pages on this
thing.
Are
you serious?
Yes.
It's amazing. You have to borrow my copy because
I'm going to borrow your copy. That's happening.
As all the bits that really make the sense. I mean, it's just so ridiculous, dude.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
So, Corey, tell us what you know about the history of the record.
This album was the first appearance of Eric Carr.
Right.
Yes.
Peter had left. He had his issues then. Obviously, and it's reflected in, you know, kind of musically what was going on Unmasked.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided with the hiring of Eric Carr, who is an incredible drummer. I mean, even with the stigma that's attached to this album, you can hear the chop.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Chops galore.
And that's one of the reasons why people for the longest time didn't realize that it was Anton Figg on Dark Light, because it sounds so close. to Eric Carr's style. Like, he's so good.
Yeah.
But I think what they realized was that they had leaned too far into the pop, like you said, when Cheap Trick sounded like Metallica compared to them. I mean, you know, you lean a little too close to it, right?
Sheena Easton sounded like more Metallica than they do.
Just had a pentagram or forehead, for God's sakes.
Right.
So they kind of retreat a little bit and they go, okay, well, our biggest selling album was a concept album. What if we get Bob back to kind of recapture that magic and kind of lean into it, like try to figure out this storyline that would tie these bits of music, because some of this stuff had already been written and was demoed prior to the concept kind of being laid out. And I'd still like some show me on the doll what the concept is, because I don't know. There's no story here other than the man child is the chosen one.
Yeah.
He's taking the oath, and there's an escape. Ah, Mr. Black. Well, end of story. I don't know what's happening here.
And then he believes in me, and then that's the end of the story. Yeah.
Well, let me just jump in here with the basic plot of The Elder involves the recruitment and training of a young hero, the boy, by the Council of Elders who belong to the Order of the Rose, a mysterious group dedicated to combating evil.
Yeah.
The boy is guided by an elderly caretaker named Morpheus.
Right.
The album's lyrics describe the boy's feelings during his journey and training as he overcomes his early doubts to become confident and self-assured.
Uh-huh.
And that's basically it. And the Elder are
You're just making that up.
That's it. There's no...
And that's it. Yeah,
I don't believe you.
What you just described was a synopsis. So this is essentially a synopsis album. Like, that's all this is. It's like, okay... This is what we're thinking about, but there's no end. Like, because honestly, Dark Light and Mr. Blackwell are the only songs that really tie to some sort of adversary. And it was just a pain to try and get Ace to be involved in the goddamn thing. He only plays on
it. And he hated it. He hated the idea to the point where this was the catalyst of him leaving Kiss.
Right.
He didn't go to Toronto to go record with the guys. He did everything in his house in Connecticut. He refused to leave.
Right.
So he didn't join them to like actually join in on the festivities. So he just was like, I'll do my stuff here. You guys figure it out.
How much I'm going to record here? You guys, you want to come down?
Yeah.
Come on in. Come on.
Yeah.
Lara!
Lara, mix my song for me.
What? Way to change my strength, Lara.
So it surprises me too. Like you said, I love what Corey just said. This is the first ever and only synopsis album, not a concept album.
Yeah.
And you would think Gene, being such a comic book fan, because this, of course, came from the mind of Gene Simmons, would have a little bit more structure to this. And like you said, it kind of honestly reminds me of another great record that's a terrible concept record, which is Seventh Son of a Seventh Son by Iron Maiden.
Yep.
It's kind of a concept, but there's not really. This reminds me of that, too.
There's a handful of fucking amazing songs on it.
Yes.
Yes.
But it's pulled all over the place. It's too wet.
Yeah.
It was missing the original edge that honestly, even Somewhere in Time had, which was just so, even with the synths, it fucking punched. It's one of my favorite albums of all time.
Agreed.
But Seventh Son, it went too far that way. I agree. But I will say it has one of their best songs ever, which is The Evil That Men Do. It's one of the best.
Oh God, yeah.
I love it's one of my favorite Maiden records period. I'm just talking from a storyline standpoint.
Right.
I remember Bruce said like it's the worst concept album. We have no idea what we're talking about. He said you want to hear a concept record for the story, Operation Mindcrime, for example.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Tommy it would be a great example of a concept record, you know? And this is a concept, and it also surprised me because Kiss loves The Who.
Yeah.
They love The Who.
Yeah.
So you would think they would have had it all figured out, but it's not. It's so jumbled and strange.
Well, to do a concept record like Tommy or Quadrophenia, where you have an actual linear storyline with real characters, it's really difficult. And I didn't think that Kiss understood that.
You know what this reminds me of, honestly? I think there's a couple of reasons why it came to be the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
A, everyone in Kiss was completely distracted. Gene was trying to get into acting at the time. He had a couple of movies that were coming down the pike. Also was up for a couple of different TV shows. that he's auditioning for. And the only reason he didn't take those shows is because they didn't pay as well as Kiss. So he kind of retreated back to, you know, he came running home to mama, and that was it, you know? So it was kind of a, let's throw everything at the wall and see what happens. Now, I think their idea of the concept album lends itself not to their love of the Who, but to the of the Beatles.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And if you know anything about the Beatles, is that they made incredible albums, but their concept albums were shit.
Yes.
You look at Sgt. Pepper, you look at Magical Mystery Tour, like everything in the middle, they would just go, oh, let's just throw these fucking songs on. It's like, okay, we're going to tell the story. Okay. And then we're just going to, this is a commercial break. We ran out of time.
Yeah.
That's what this lent itself. They looked at those and they were like, okay, well, we don't really need to do anything in the middle. The good bits, you know, it's like, and then we're going to end with this weird, you know, Morpheus, you have summoned here to the boy, you know, like.
It's funny, too. I've got some album titles when they were still going to call it or make it a rock record that I had never heard before. And they are Disguise the Limit.
Oh.
Disguise the Limit. That's actually pretty good.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Really good. Yeah. All American Guys. And that's Guys, G-U-I-S-E.
Wow.
They remember, it reminds me of the intro music for the American Males. You remember?
American Guys.
Oh.
And the other one is Ear Openers. These are actual titles that were listed on a press release. Ear Openers.
So heavy. Ear Openers.
Let's discuss the cover briefly. It's the first cover ever in history that doesn't have them on the cover of the record.
Right.
I just learned that last night.
Yeah. He has the logo. I mean, you have to look.
Right. Good call.
Weird.
Were they trying to appeal to people that didn't like Kiss? Like to hide all Kiss elements?
If you listen to it, it's very much leaning into the eccentricities of Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And there's that whole Lord of the Rings vibe that's going, it's very fair. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Obviously, Kiss, they were beloved by us and respected by us, the fans, but on a whole, they were kind of, you know, sectioned off and never really given their due. And it's funny because then ironically, they didn't get their due until this album by Rolling Stone, Cream. Like they bigged it up, but everyone else was like, what the hell is so... I think maybe that's why they did it, because they knew that it would never get the fair shake.
Yeah.
The only reason people were going to pick it up is because it was from Kiss. You know, like it's
right.
I don't look at that album cover and go, oh, I need to hear that. You know, I've only done that a handful of times. I did that with Don't Break the Oath, The Merciful Fate.
Yeah.
I did
first
Holy Diver.
Yeah.
First Maiden record.
Yeah.
Draw you in. You're just like, what the hell is this? That cover doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons too is, like you said, they talk about all the time about how they became a kids band and they lost their edge. And then it seems like an Unmasked, you can even see them saying, we want to take our masks off.
Right.
And on their own cover, the reporter at the last blurb goes, I still say they suck. This is on their own record cover. Like, what are you doing? The reporter should, you know. So I think, like Corey said, they realized that if they put it out with Kiss on the cover, nobody would take it seriously.
Right.
And at the time, they really felt this was a Pink Floyd-esque type of, you know.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about concept records, I mean, the fucking Wall is probably the best of all time.
Yeah.
But
and the Wall was Bob Ezrin, and it was only done the year before. So, I mean, you know.
Great call.
They're really riding on that tale.
Yeah, that could be the reason why they went with Bob Ezrin as well, because not only did he do Destroyer, he also did do The Wall. So the cover, once again, is just a guy, a hand about to knock on a door politely to get into Morpheus's house, I guess. That's where he lives.
His cave, I guess. I don't know.
His cave.
Where do the rogues live?
I think he was knocking on Morpheus's door to ask for directions.
Right. Like,
excuse
my
me.
My car got stuck.
Is the order
outside
of the rose home? And just because we're Kiss nerds here, the like we said in this book, there's a whole chapter on whose hand that is. Bill O'Coin said it was a hand model.
Right.
Somebody else said it was the carpenter who made the door. But it definitely apparently is actually Paul Stanley's hand.
Exactly.
Yes.
All three of could be true.
Yeah, right.
He's, you know, he's done some brewing for Folgers and everything. Yeah. And then, we don't know, you know. I mean, he's so gifted. I mean, he could just, you know, he could be a carpenter. He could have built
that. All right.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
So let's talk about the material here, because we mentioned there has been a remaster where they claimed that they had now put it in the proper sequence, which, like Corey said earlier, it still doesn't make any sense either way.
Right.
It makes less sense, actually. Like, at least
yeah.
the original release, it looked like, especially knowing the story, quote unquote,
yeah.
you can read that linear. Like, you can start on one and then finish it there. But the new one, it starts with fanfare, goes immediately into Odyssey. The first four songs, it's you're just sitting there going,
yeah,
what's happening? Like, is anything going to happen at any
right time? Right
yeah,
crazy.
So they start with the oath, which is the record company saying, like, this whole thing is the shits,
right?
You know, we got to put something heavy on for the people. And listen, if we were Kiss fans in 1981, this came out November 10th, 1981,
right,
you would put that on and go, all right, they're back.
Yeah.
You know, this is pretty damn good. It's a great rock riff. Paul sings great.
Yep.
Like you said, Eric Carr's drums are crushing.
Yep.
100%. And you're hearing them in a way that you've never really heard them before.
Yeah.
To me, the heaviest that they had ever gotten was stuff like Love Gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Making Love.
That was on Destroyer, was heavier, you know.
Yeah.
Got Thunder. Detroit Rock City, very riffy, you know.
Yeah.
Get to the Oath. That's when they're really leaning into the riff.
Yeah.
The only thing that throws me off on the Oath is when Paul leans into the falsetto, because you know he can hit those notes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but that's honestly, and that's nitpicking, because that song is actually really, really good. It's on one of my cardio playlists. And so yeah. I put it on. That's the end of the thought I have forged.
Now, Zach, you said, you know, you mentioned something the other day about who helped co-write this song.
Yes. An interesting tidbit I found out just last night is there's a songwriter named Tony Powers from New York who wrote Odyssey by himself like a year before The Elder. And Paul happened to hear it somehow and contacted him and said, you know, listen, we're doing this concept record. Would you be interested in pitching in and writing some songs? And Tony's like, sure, I'm not doing anything. So he co-wrote The Oath and he co-wrote one other tune on the record. But Odyssey is his tune. He actually made a video for it.
Right.
With a lot of like Lois Childs and all these other actors are in it.
Post Elder too, that they put it out. Like,
yes.
It
was out and it was like, and he had a bunch of actors in it. Turns out that Tony Powers, in his alternate life, played Jimmy two times in the movie Goodfellas.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Where he pops up in the middle of Goodfellas. He goes, I'm going to go get the papers.
Get the papers.
And I was like, that's the guy that wrote Odyssey.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that Lou Reed helped write a lot of the lyrics for the stuff Gene Simmons came up with.
That's right.
And you want to hear something interesting, go find the version of Only You that Doro recorded for
one of her. I forgot about that.
Gene Simmons produced one of Doro's solo albums, and the original version of Only You before he reworked it.
Wow.
Oh.
Which really only the Only You bit, you know, and kind of reworked. Different lyrics. There's no man child mentioned, but
no man child. I'm not listening to it.
A couple steps higher, like she's hitting it hard, and you're
wow.
This is crazy.
Damn. Doro's got one of the best, like motivationally happy voice. I'm just here. I just did Only You by Gene Simmons. I'm so excited to do this song. Yeah. You have to hear it. Like every time she's on Instagram, I just listen. Just want to go run through a wall. Go, Doro. Yes.
Yeah. She's thrilled to do anything. It's like, it's awesome. She's so sweet.
So the Oath then goes into, like Corey said, fanfare,
right.
Which is this little instrumental. And once again, maybe that makes sense a little bit more at the beginning of the record. It definitely doesn't make sense after the Oath, because it's bow, bow, bow. And then here we like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. Well,
I hazard to say it would make more sense to have done fanfare first.
Yes.
Right.
Then to go to, because then you've got like this, if you were going to play it live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little musical thing that you could use as an intro, and then you come out of the gate with
bash in them. Yeah,
exactly. Like,
but that's not the case. The remastered, if the 1-2-3 punch is fanfare, Just a Boy, and Odyssey. I mean, no one's gonna make it through that.
Yeah,
slowest start to any Kiss album.
Yeah.
Dude, like even yeah. that had Forever on it. Like I was just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, and then we get into Just the Boy, where, you know.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Corey, tell us why you're laughing. And I'm laughing for the same reason.
Because it's the lyrics for this song. It's like, and God love them. Like, they were really trying hard. But it's just like, when they hit it, it's just like, when I'm just a boy. Like, when I hear it, I don't hear Kiss. I see crazy Broadway shit that just comes out of nowhere where you're just like,
Well, here's the part that makes me laugh, though. When you sang that part, which is Paul's falsetto, and then you get this epic, like, gong, gong, gong.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the pomposity, if that's even a word, the pomposity, we were just.
Oh, absolutely.
They're showing in this. It's just like, oh my God, this is fucking slash brutal slash the greatest thing ever.
Yeah. It's a little bit of both. It's kind of like they enter into like Godspell or some like Broadway musical production.
Exactly, dude.
But the thing I love about it is like, you know, they kind of mock it now and bag on it now. But imagine once again, them in the studio, like they're making this. They're not thinking this is bad. They're making this going, this is the shit. Ezra, you nailed it.
How did we pronounce it? We were like, Paul, this is Gene Simmons from Kiss. A new album, Music from Elda. I don't know if we're going to be ready for it. You can hear them talking about it, man.
Oh, yeah. We're taking this all the way to Broadway and then cinema. It's going to be a masterpiece.
That's what I was talking about. I am convinced that there is an Elder movie somewhere.
Oh, well, that 100%. Was the idea. He wanted to do a movie on this, didn't he? Wasn't that part of the plan?
Totally.
And I said, it's probably loaded with 70s character.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Carl Malton, like people like that, like just like in robes and everybody's just like, what are we doing again? You know, basically everyone that couldn't get into Phantom of the Amusement Park. I mean, I could see it. I was like, this is, and it's probably in a vault somewhere.
I'm sure there's. There's a press announcement. It's like, Gavin McLeod is Morpheus.
Yeah, right.
Like,
Jimmy McNichol as the boy.
As the boy. Jimmy McNichol.
Another another tidbit I wanted to bring up is that Bob Ezrin doesn't really remember a lot of making this record because he said he was so high on cocaine.
Yeah,
for the whole recording. Like so there's that. Yeah,
you can hear it on this album.
Yeah, everything sounds not good. Not good. Yeah.
I mean, it depends. Cocaine smells really good.
Yeah,
yeah,
it really does. I tried to smell as much as I could.
It has a wonderful aroma.
You know? It really does.
It really
it's,
does.
It's really good when you mix it in your Folgers.
Yeah.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
We move over to Dark Light, which we discussed a little bit earlier. It's Ace's basically only appearance on the record. He might have played a few guitars here and there. It's his only vocal, and it's a song written not just with Ace and Gene, but with Anton Figg and Lou Reed.
Yes.
Which is quite interesting.
I'm still trying to figure out what the hell's going on. It's the happiest dark song I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I've never heard a song that is supposed to be about impending doom. I'm just like, what in the hell is, what am I hearing? Like, it's just crazy.
Well, and also too, it's because of Ace's voice.
Yeah.
When he's trying to be foreboding, you know, cause there's something wrong and you don't know what it is. It's like,
yeah.
Watch out. It is not a Gamora. Like, it's just like.
But this is part of the malevolent order.
Yeah, malevolent order.
How many times do you think, how many takes do you think it took Ace to be able to pronounce the word malevolent properly?
That's why they cut it in and it's not on beat. It's like, just say it in your own time. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Malevolent.
Is what is a malevolent order? What am I ordering?
Of the magnificent order. What, it's not magnificent. Did you guys see when he played it for the first time ever on the Kiss Cruise? You might have even been on board, Zach, a few years ago.
I might have, yeah.
And the best part was he literally had the lyrics taped to the fucking floor on the stage. And he's just reading it. And he already sounds like he's reading when he's singing anyways. Yes, but this was like Corey just said, completely out of time. And then he's like, I can't even know what this means. Like, he basically, like, he just, people have been waiting for 35 years for this song, and he just fucking tanked it. You can tell he didn't rehearse it. Or I'm like, come on, dude. You had one job.
Yeah, sounds like par for the course.
Yeah, I mean, I've played all those shows with him. You're probably very aware of that. I don't even know what this means. I wrote this song on a big bag of cocaine.
That's what he said in front of Torpedo Girl. He goes, okay, this next song I wrote on a big bag of cocaine.
I said to him on Talk is Jericho, Ace, who is the Torpedo Girl? He's like, there's a lot of Torpedo Girls, especially in New York.
Yeah.
He thought that was hilarious. And I was like, all right, whatever a Torpedo Girl is, especially in New York. Okay, now we get into what I consider, besides The Oath, the two best songs on the record for me. Only You, which we discussed that Doro did, which is a Simmons tune. That song is pretty great. Like, it's a great prog rock song.
Yeah,
I agree.
I love the fact that the melody from Just a Boy comes back for a second.
Yes.
Yes, I do too. That's very Tommy.
Yes.
They reprise the introduction and the outro, the overture.
Yeah, the reprise, right? Yeah,
the reprise, yeah.
It's a concept album. It's like recurring themes kind of come back.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, so this harkens to something, this ties to something, but then you really don't get that again, which is crazy.
Right, yeah, that's the only time they did that.
Right.
The whole record.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like how it's got, you know, it starts off a little bit slower. Then it's got that really heavy.
Yeah.
It really does take you to a lot of different places, which, like I said, this is one of those tunes. If they busted that out on the Kiss Cruise, people would lose their effing minds on that one.
Because it's so epically, too. Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so great.
Yeah, and like you said, Paul's lines come in there. So any Kiss song where Paul and Gene sing on the same tune makes me happy. Then the other tune that I really dig is Under the Rose, written by Gene and Eric Carr with a rare songwriting credit.
The few times that Eric actually wrote music.
Yeah.
And which is crazy, because if you were thinking about it, that would not be the song that you would go, you know what, this sounds like a drummer wrote it. It's very vibey. The guitar playing on it is super cool. And the solo is rad too.
I agree.
Solo's awesome. I think that's Paul with a delay.
Oh yeah, because it says that Ace played bass on Under the Rose, Dark Light, and The Oath.
Yeah.
And Gene played rhythm guitar on Only You. It doesn't give us an actual who do you think did the solo on that?
I say Paul.
On Under the Rose, I think it was Paul, because it's just his solos were always just so, I don't want to say simple, but they told the story really well. I mean, look at the solo that he did on Sure Know Something. Like, it's just so beautiful, and it just gets to the point right away.
His little solo in Black Diamond is like that. Yeah. Paul is like James Hetfield. He doesn't do a lot of solos, but the ones he does are very memorable.
100%. And you can hum every one of them. And he always picks great note choices. All of his solos are great.
Yeah.
And once again, it actually had those two songs in a row had some storyline to it where you could fit, okay, I'm starting to understand what this concept is. And then we go to another, now people are into it a little bit more because they did it on Unplugged. But when this came out, oh my gosh, A World Without Heroes.
Right.
Another tune written with Lou Reed. I remember howling at how bad this song was when I was a kid.
Not only that, but then you realize it's like, wait a minute, Cher did a cover of this?
Yeah.
Like, if you want to appreciate the Gene Simmons cover, you listen to Cher version, which is just like,
Oh. Did anybody see that on Solid Gold?
That's what I was going to say, Zach. Tell me about your memories of Solid Gold.
I watched it on Solid Gold. I was pretty out of Kiss at the time, but I was, you know, respectful because they're family. So I was keeping tabs on them, and I hadn't heard The Elder yet, but they said, you know, tonight we're going to premiere the new video from Kiss as The Elder. And they played that video, but I'm giving it my best shot. You know, I don't let go. And, you know,
getting redder. You're just like,
yeah. I was just like, oh, it's not getting any better, you know? And then in the end, you know, when Gene cried and I just went, okay, this is what's, you know.
So I vividly remember I was still in elementary school, Robert Browning Elementary School in Winnipeg, Canada. I remember going to school and everybody talking about Solid Gold and Gene crying at the end.
Yeah.
I remember drawing mocking pictures of Gene Simmons with the tear, like crying, like a bunch of tears. Ah, look at this. Gene Simmons is crying. And he looks so stupid with his short hair ponytail and Paul, the giant purple headband and short hair, like almost like a.
Right. That was part of the photo shoot that they did for that album, too.
And Paul had like the Tony Manero haircut, you know?
Right. What is happening here?
Yeah, just the fact that he cried. I mean, here's the guy, once again, that was known for breathing fire and spitting blood.
Right.
And now here he is crying on Solid Gold, which I just remember that was a big hit for Kiss, to where it took a while for them to dig out, and only them taking off their makeup was allowed them. Because other than that, I remember they were done at that point in my school, at least.
Oh, God, finished.
Yeah, I agree.
In the light of day, like listening back to it now, Under the Rose and World Without Heroes actually structurally has really good melodies. I didn't really consider it at the time because I just thought, this is not Kiss, this is whatever. But now that nobody cares, you listen to Under the Rose, it's in 6/8 time. The verse is really cool. Na, 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 na. It's really hooky. And then at the end, it's just got this Pink Floyd wall, you know, Under the Rose, da, 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 which is like,
that riff is crazy.
Yeah. Da, 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 da,
da, da. I love that. I think that's awesome. You know, I think it's like
how are they fucking playing this? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And they embraced it. And I just thought the chorus was good. And then lines were good.
That riff from start to finish is different. It changes in the middle.
Yes.
People don't realize that. It's like, you try playing that motherfucker, it's difficult.
It's really hard to play because the timing is so weird. And Gene's vocal is like, you just pure, like, his version of John Lennon, and he's not being the demon. He has a really, you know, pure, sweet voice on that. And I just thought the melodies were great and the hooks were great. And I was like, okay, you know, this had some potential.
Right.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
I was looking for a picture of the band to show on screen, and I found an article. There's a couple things that I'm glad that I found here. First of all, when Ace heard the final mix and his guitars, I guess, had been edited out, he said he hurled the cassette at the wall and quit the band. I'm sure it took a while longer, but he's throwing it at the wall.
Right.
The other one, and I know for sure that Corey's going to love this. I knew this. I'm glad that we remembered it. So they actually did start talking about being a feature film starring, this is amazing, starring Chris Makepeace.
No,
I heard
shit.
That.
My bodyguard.
That. My bodyguard.
Told you.
My bodyguard. Yeah.
My bodyguard and Meatballs. And then it also says possibly Patrick Stewart as Morpheus.
That's right. He was going to play Morpheus.
And also the only Kiss album to not go gold. Although I'm sure that's changed now, but at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many of us now that, and it's weird because as divisive as this album is, there are some diehard Kiss fans that this is their favorite album.
It really is. Yeah.
Above, you know, Destroyer, above the first album, which to me is damn near perfect. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy how into this album some people are, and you just go, oh
yeah, it's so true.
What is the name? Is it the Weezer album Pinkerton that was so that almost drove Rivers Cuomo crazy, but now it's kind of like the elder of the Weezer catalog?
Yeah.
And then we go to once again, Mr. Blackwell, another Lou Reed. Corey, who is Mr. Blackwell? Obviously, like, who is this guy?
I mean, that's a good question. You know, I don't think we ever got an answer on it. Like, this is supposed to be the antagonist.
Right.
And listen, if we're going to assume that it's his island, what happened that they captured everybody? The only thing about this song that fucking makes me laugh like crazy, and we talked about this all the time, is the fact that Gene fell in love with that bass. So he would just make sure that there was just a little something in between every line on this song. So it's like, I'm letting you know.
Yeah.
Mr. Blackwell is still here. It's like,
we talked about that on the bus, man. Every time there was like a stop where there's just a drum beat, Bean goes, Gene goes, check this out.
The fact is, like, oh, you got to do it again.
But like you said, yeah, you can hear that. He just loves the sloppiness of the taking the finger off the fret and putting it like a some kind of a flange and an echo. So it's like,
yeah.
I have a theory that this album is supposed to be a mirror image of Destroy.
Wow.
Because they, A, wanted it to be as successful as Destroyer. B, that's why a lot of the songs read the way they do.
Yeah.
There's the quiet one, which would be the Beth. There's this one, which would be the God of Thunder. There's the rock ones that would be the Detroit Rock City, the King of the Nighttime World.
Yeah.
So if you look at those albums side by side, they would have like this thematically, not subject wise, but thematically, they would have this vibe, right?
I can see that.
Interesting.
It doesn't nearly have the pop of it. This song is nowhere near as good as God of Thunder. And it was like, every album had its demon song, and this one just never lived up to it. But I will say that chorus riff is really
good. Yeah,
it's really good.
I feel that.
It's got a little bit of malice to it, which is kind of nice, you know, for him.
I always thought that maybe Mr. Blackwell was meant to be like the evil one,
right?
In the story, like he's the devil, Mr. Blackwell.
Yeah,
but there's no backstory at all.
No proof of that. Yeah, I know.
Right. Yeah.
Songs in the front half, like, yeah. I mean, by this, but what, six songs?
We're already halfway through the second side almost.
Right. It's like, well, who gives a shit? Like, you're going to give the villain one song? What the
fuck? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And we've just met the villain. We don't even know who he is. Like, he's just appeared.
We know what he doesn't like.
Yeah.
He just loves to sin, and he hates to win. Like, yeah, okay.
And he's not well. That's it.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, Gene pulled the ultimate flag on the play in writing lyrics where he rhymed well with Blackwell. You can't do that. You can't rhyme. You're not well, Mr. Blackwell. It sucks.
I got an idea.
Yeah. And then we escape from the island. And that's the other song that Ace wrote on, and I'm assuming that he played on, and also with Eric Carr.
Yeah.
Eric and Ace wrote this with Bob Ezrin.
Right.
And you know who played bass on it?
Who?
Bob Ezrin.
Nice.
Just read that last night.
That makes sense. I mean,
yeah.
As fragmented as the creative team was, I mean, it makes sense that, you know, but then again, I mean, that was kind of like, it's kind of the way it was in the 70s, you know, like,
just
get the there, you know, I mean, look at Night Moves, you know, that song doesn't feature any of the Silver Bullet Band.
Right.
You told me that on tour.
Well, he had written it, but he never played it for the producer. And by the time the band got home, the producer, he was playing it. The producer's like, what is that song? Let's get some session players in. And they played it.
Mm. Yeah.
Obviously, that was a thing. And, you know, people talk about Alice Cooper's band playing on basically everything. So,
yeah,
it makes sense that you would have stuff like that. But at the same time, I mean, this is Kiss, for Christ's sakes. You know, there's so many, you know, the fact that nobody could even get on the same page.
Right.
Well, yeah. And the fact that it's, you know, Gene and Paul's baby, especially Gene, he doesn't even show up to play on it. That once again just tells me they didn't. didn't give a shit. And kind of reading through these articles that I'm seeing, they're basically all just saying that we were completely delusional.
Right.
Nobody would tell us no, and we thought we knew everything, and we didn't. We know. And you look back on it now, and I was like, we just half-assed this whole thing, and
right,
that's the problem. Yeah. Kiss never half-assed anything.
Yeah, and that's reflected in the title, because I remember reading that they just had a list of titles.
Right. The sky's the limit.
Yeah, the sky's the limit.
Exactly. It's like, I'm going to name this.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even written. And then it's like, okay, this is what I'm going to call it. It was, all right, well, I've got this piece. Oh, what's on the list? What hasn't been taken? Okay, we'll use Escape from the Island.
Right.
Because it doesn't feel like anything. I mean, if you're going to do Escape from the Island, you want something frenetic. You want something dark. You want something that's all over the place.
Yeah.
And really, this was just a rhythm track.
Yeah, exactly.
And you also want a reason for an escape from the island. Nothing has happened. Like, once again, the story sucks.
Yeah, but yeah, we don't know what's going on in the story. Why are they escaping, and who are they escaping from? And, you know, like,
has there even been a talk of an island? Is this the first that we find that that they're even on an island?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we were on an island. Sorry.
Oh yeah, who sails the ship on a stormy sea?
We're on a boat. Like, wait a minute, what? What are you? What?
Should we got to get off the island to escape?
Yeah, yeah.
So then talk about just half-assing it. And once again, this one to me, even when I was first discovering the record, always kind of confused me. It's a concept record, once again, that Gene has written. And right near the end of it, they put a cover song, which of course is Odyssey, which we talked earlier, was written by this Tony Powers. It seems to me they probably heard it and went, well, that'll fit. I'll put that in there. Our album's an Odyssey. So what the fuck is this doing here? And it's so ridiculous, this song.
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's so orchestrated. Like, it's just so loaded with different, like, it takes you out of anything trying to be into and to get to that point in the first place.
Yeah.
Super weird.
Yeah, it's a giant boom mic in the shot of the record.
Right. It's it's perfect. It's exactly what I'm getting. Oh, shit.
Boom.
You're in the frame. Your boom mic's in the frame. Get it out.
What?
Act.
But just to read you some of this imagery here, and obviously this guy was trying to be freaking John Lennon in, you know, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds or something.
Yeah.
There's a child in a sundress looking at a rainy sky.
Yep.
There's a place in the desert where an ocean once danced by. It's like, come on, dude.
I texted you guys from Mexico. Remember that? Me and the wife would go, we're in Cabo, right? We're sitting on the deck. And I just grabbed the phone and I texted. I was like, you know what? I'm down here and I'm just got my eyes closed. And there's a girl in a sundress looking like, you fucking asshole. Like,
and the worst thing is, we instantly know, right?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're going through.
I went to Eli Roth's house a few years ago and he's playing the soundtrack from Fulci's Zombie. And I said, who's more of a nerd? The fact that you're just sitting and by yourself listening to the soundtrack of Zombie, or the fact that the moment I walked in, I knew it was the soundtrack of Zombie?
Yeah.
Who's the worst nerd there? That's the same with those lyrics.
You kind of guys are neck and neck.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
We're reaching the exciting conclusion of The Elder and still not exactly sure what's going on. It comes to, which is actually a pretty good Kiss song, I, which I think if they would have played that through the 80s, people would probably really dig it. It's the one song that really kind of fits.
I like this song.
Previous Kiss. What do you think, Corey?
Right. It's definitely got that Kiss vibe to it.
Mm. Yep.
And yet it feels even cheesier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Paul's approach to the vocal is so weird. Like he goes into like a bebop a blue, like he just, you know,
yeah
what? And then the lyric choices are so weird. This is also, and people don't realize this is the last song that they sing together as a duo.
Interesting.
I was gonna say, yeah,
10 years, I think. I I don't think they sang another one together where they traded it off until God Made Rock and Roll for You.
Yeah,
that's right.
And they did it on Spit, too. They did it on Spit on the Revenge record.
Yeah, and Spit. This is like the return to Rock and Roll All Night, where someone takes a verse and someone takes another verse.
Exactly.
And coincidentally, what was the difference or the other similarity between The Elder and Revenge was they were both produced by Bob Ezrin. That's got to be an Ezrin. Like, oh, come on, guys. You got to start singing together again.
Yeah.
I mean, the great about Kiss is that they were such a great amalgam. There was heaviness. The songwriting was amazing.
Yeah.
And the fact that their voices sounded so good together. They were the McCartney-Lennon of our generation, man. Like,
yeah, I agree 100%.
Stuff that they put together and the way they sang it together was fucking awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
And I remember that they played this on Solid Gold.
I do remember that too.
Or was it Fridays? Or one of those shows.
They played it on Fridays, and they did a third one. I forgot. Oh, World Without Heroes.
The Oath was slamming, dude. Like,
the Oath was killer.
You're just like, oh, okay, this is killing it.
But they always did that, though. The last three records, they started the record with something kind of heavy, like Is That You? And you're like, oh, it's going to be another great Kiss record.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then slowly but surely it starts to, like, you know, do this, and you're just like, oh, damn it.
And it's interesting, too, because there was, is this the song that apparently they did a video for, or was it The Oath? Have you guys heard of this before, that they actually did do a video, a concept video, for one of these tunes?
Wow.
I think they did it for I.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. Nobody's seen it. It was never released, but there's stills from it.
Right.
Wow.
It's really shitty looking. It's like in a high school gym with kind of these. You remember the Superman's Fortress in the first Superman where you saw Marlon Brando with kind of light tube things? There's like blue ice around.
Oh yeah, totally.
There is actually footage, you can Google it and find it, as there's also a lost video of Thrills in the Night from the Animalize record.
Really?
Another one that they never released.
Yeah, dude, I forgot all about that.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then of course it finishes off with Finale, which is just another little 1 minute long kind of mandolin.
It doesn't even get its own track on the new one.
I know.
Just cucked at the end of I, and it just, Morpheus, and somebody here to give testimony for the boy. And
I do, Lord.
You're my Lord. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Who
would have been so much better if the voice of Chris Makepeace would have done that narration?
Yeah.
Finale is what led me to believe that they had actually filmed something, because the sound lends itself to somebody ripping that audio off of film.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's especially the reprise of Fanfare. It's very analog and like something that they pulled off of film. That's why I'm like, I wonder how much it would cost to get Kiss to give us a special viewing of The Elder. You know, it'd be like, it's like Jerry Lewis's The Day the Clown Died.
Exactly. Like, no one's seen it, you know.
Well, it's funny too, because like you said, imagine it probably makes Kiss Meets the Phantom look like Gone with the Wind.
Right?
Yeah.
Which we would just eat that up.
Dude, I love Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Amusement
Park. Oh, totally.
Was obsessed with it, and we still quote it. Don't
we? It's still like, quote it every fucking day.
Our child.
You're looking for someone, but it's not Kiss.
Yeah.
Oh.
All the Hanna-Barbera sound as effects.
Oh my God.
Ace as disguised as a black stuntman. Yeah. Like, it's amazing.
It is a masterpiece.
Just to kind of get some final thoughts on The Elder, they never toured on this record.
No.
They lost Ace as a result, and were critically kind of at the end of the rope. They basically had one more really great album in Creatures of the Night that nobody cared about. And then, of course, they took the makeup off,
right,
which then gave them a whole new life in the 80s. And, of course, we know what happened with Kiss now.
Right.
But at this point in time, it was pretty low moment in history for Kiss, for sure.
Yeah.
It was tough. It was tough to be a Kiss fan. It was tough to defend the record at the time, because so many bands in 81 were, there was Iron Maiden, Killers, you know, all these other things were coming out. And then you just got the new Kiss record and you're like, they can't compete.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, how are we going to reconcile this? You know,
I mean, here's the thing though. We talk about the good things that came from the elder because it kind of forced them creatively into a corner to figure out what they needed to do to kind of rise above it. And honestly, started with the elder. You know, they knew that they were going to be able to go the way of Unmasked.
Yep.
If it wasn't for the elder, we wouldn't have had Creatures of the Night, which to me,
that's one of my favorite Kiss records.
Barn burner, dude. It's got, especially the heavy stuff, dude. Mm-hmm. When they played War Machine live, I watched them play in Portugal with Megadeth opening.
Oof.
And they started War Machine. Me and Tooch looked at each other like we were shitting bricks. We were like, So I think if it wasn't for the elder of them kind of forcing them to go back to the roots and to start thinking of ways, because their songwriting, dude, is unmatched.
No, I agree.
Right.
They can still write some of the best songs, even some of the cheesy stuff.
Yeah.
But that gets lost in the fact because of, you know, just how errant, you know, the elder was. So to me, you know, the elder was really the cog that needed to be in the machine to kind of get them going.
Definitely.
And now with the right kind of ears, you know, with the ear openers, you listen to it now and you go, this is fast. Like it really is because it still sounds like them. It sounds analog. It still has that, even though it was 81, it still has that 70s feel to it.
Definitely.
You know, some of that stuff musically is really fucking cool, man. Like, so I'll defend this album to the day I die, even with all of its quirks and flaws, eccentricities. There's a reason I listen to it every day. And my wife just looks at me and go, Christ, you're listening to this again. I figured out how to trigger fanfare from my Apple phone.
Dude.
I'll put my phone over by her and I'll just boop, 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 boop. And she just
tell Chris what you did in England when we were touring with fanfare.
I talked about
it. At the front desk.
No, it wasn't even the front desk. Every trip we took through the night, man, it was just like fanfare looped 7 hours.
It was either The Elder or Crazy Nights. I played
Crazy Nights,
song over and over.
Another great record, yeah.
There was great video of us simultaneously trying to sync them up, but they sounded super weird. I was just like, oh, we got to record this. This is too good.
It was fucking glorious.
Driving for us in the UK, we're like on the verge of striking.
I
have to listen to this fucking album one more time, mate. Oh, sweet fucking God. And it was, it was brilliant.
The thing about The Elder, and like any band that's had almost 50 years of history right now, you're going to have the down periods, right? It's like listening to the Stones record, Dirty Work.
Dirty Work,
That's kind of the Stones critically maligned record or whatever it may be, or some of McCartney's, you know, later work or whatever.
Right.
There's going to be these records that don't make sense and they're not great for the overall, but it's part of what makes the band amazing and legendary and classic is that they did take the chance to work on this record.
Yeah.
Whether they like it or not, it's too late, Paul and Gene. The songs in the album belongs to us now.
The genie.
Exactly.
Bottle. You don't get to take it back.
That's right.
Yeah.
We get to listen to it every day and go, what the fuck was going through their heads?
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, me too. And also, like, years later, we can also look at it for the validity and like, you know, the merit that it actually has that we didn't see back then.
Exactly.
There's so much goodness in that record, you know, that kind of went overlooked, you know.
I asked Paul once about it, and I said, come on, dude, it's not that bad. He goes, no, you're right, it's worse. And then and then he sends me the puke emoji.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do that, man. You can't release it. And he's like, no, it's worse. It's worse than that. Last question for you guys. What's your favorite song on the record?
Oh, on that, it's got to be The Oath.
Yeah.
That one just, I mean, it just, like, it starts and finishes, but I'd put Only One on there as well, or Only You, excuse me.
Yeah.
Got it. It's a toss-up between The Oath and Only You.
How about you, Zach?
I like The Oath as like a traditional, that's like the closest thing to a traditional Kiss song.
Yeah,
right.
But I always thought that I was like an anthem. It had that kind of like the whole crowd like singing along, and it had this really upbeat, you know, I want to rock and roll all night kind of feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are like the two traditional ones. But honestly, in terms of musicality, I think that Under the Rose.
Right.
It's really melodic. It's really hooky. I love Gene's voice on it, and it's in 6/8, and it's just, I don't know. I think it's really pretty, and it's got that heavy chorus, and then dun, dun, dun. It's like really epic. And
there's a lurching feel.
Yes.
I could see that.
I agree with all those. I also want to throw an honorable mention there for Dark Light. I love Ace's kind of elongated, I don't know how, 32-bar solo. And then they put the bongo drums in there in the back. For no reason. Like, put some bongos on there.
Yeah.
This drums, him and bongos. There's no other fucking guitar or
that's
bass.
It. Yeah, that's it.
It's almost like a Van Halen type vibe or something. I thought, you know, if that's Ace's final call before he leaves, it was a pretty good way to go out.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Definitely.
Dudes, that was a blast. I'll never be able to hear Fanfare again without thinking of you, Corey. That's for sure.
Oh, my God.
Oh, trust me. As soon as I see you, I'm going to set something up so I can play it. It'd be great.
Thanks, dudes. I'll hope to see you guys soon, and we'll have to pick another album and rock it again.
All right, bro.
Definitely, dude. Let's do it again.
Yeah!